from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into another edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, here with you on this Monday evening in Nashville, Tennessee. Joined this evening in studio by Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Adam, how are we doing this evening?
Ryan, I'm great. How are you?
Good. Always appreciate you stopping by and dropping your knowledge on us and the listeners.
Something like that.
Something
like we'll call it knowledge.
Yes. And before we get to the game from Saturday, I do want to congratulate you on the Smash Brothers, which begins this Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. You and Robbie Stanley, adding another great show to our Preds coverage here on the flagship station of the Nashville Predators.
Well, you should be congratulating yourself because it was you who greenlighted the project. So you should be patting yourself on the back. But we do appreciate it. Both Robbie and I were both very excited. We look forward to our first show this Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. We are still formulating our plans for the show, thinking of some guests we could have on, as well as the topics we'll discuss. But you know, Robbie and I spend a lot of time talking about hockey and life in general, so why not have it on for everybody to listen to for an hour every week?
Great show name, by the way.
Thank you. It was completely my idea.
It was completely your idea.
It's hard to name a radio show. I'm not sure how people do it.
You tend to overthink it.
Yeah.
I have totally, obviously, been in that situation before, and you can 100% overthink it. I remember back when Chase McCabe and I were both just producers, and we were going to start a Saturday morning show, and we could not come up with a name to save our lives. And then we landed on the Cheap Seats. And I know it was a multi-day process for you and Robbie Stanley, but you ultimately were the one who came up with the Smash Brothers.
Well, I thought it worked on a variety of levels because I wanted to have some sort of connection to the Predators in the name. So, of course, Smashville.
Smash hats.
Smash cars.
Yes.
And then Robbie and I are both avid fans of the Smash Brothers pantheon of games on Nintendo. So it just worked on a number of levels. So we're very excited. And as I mentioned, our first show this Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
There you go. Adam Vingan, radio pro here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, let's get to Saturday night. Leading in, there was a lot of anticipation for that game against the Vegas Golden Knights. The Preds had just come off back-to-back wins Wednesday and Thursday night on the East Coast, Wednesday in Washington, Thursday in New Jersey. As wonky as they were 4 points that they desperately needed. And you wanted to see that success carry over into Saturday night, and they lose 3-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights. It was their worst offensive performance of the season. They didn't give the fans really anything to cheer for. I thought that was a crowd that was ready to really explode. You thought Thursday or Wednesday and Thursday could have been a turning point in this season. And yet again, this Preds team, after taking a step forward, took a step back Saturday night.
Right. And the games on Wednesday and Thursday, the road games against Washington and New Jersey, they weren't perfect. But the encouraging sign, other than the victories, were the fact that in both games, the Predators faced turmoil of some kind. In Washington, they were up 3-1. UC Soros has a turnover behind the net, serves up a slam dunk to Alex Ovechkin. If I'm creating a list of the players that I don't want to hand the puck to on a silver platter 3 feet from the goal line, or less than 3 feet from the goal line, Alex Ovechkin, arguably the greatest goal scorer in the history of the NHL, would not be number one on my list. But it happened. Then Nick Bonino scores into his own net. And at that point, I'm watching the game in Washington, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way they're coming back from this. They ended up going down 4-3, which seemed to reinforce my opinion. But then Braden Holtby makes a mistake. Ryan Johansson ties the game shorthanded. Yannick Weber, of all people, scored the game-winning goal with some huge help in front of the net from Mikael Granlund, and they escape with a victory. And then in New Jersey, I saw a statistic from the NHL that it was the fifth game this season that featured five game-tying goals. It was a back-and-forth game. They were up, it was tied, they were down, it was tied, they were down, it was tied. They were down 4-3 entering the third period. Matt Duchene scores to tie the game. They fall behind 5-4. Philip Forsberg scores on the power play to make it 5-5, and they win in the shootout. Now, on Saturday morning, John Hines said something that was very interesting to me, because he's put a lot of emphasis on the mental side of the game. And he said that, as a new coach, the most important thing is that your players see the benefits of the changes or philosophies that you're trying to implement. That the fact that they were able to show resolve in those games against Washington and New Jersey, that helps the buy-in for the players.
Sure.
When it comes to John Hines sharing his vision, because they have tangible proof that if you do this, it will work. There have also been examples, as John Hines mentioned, of it, of when they haven't done it and it hasn't worked and they've lost. So they've seen both sides of it. But seeing results from what he wants and what he's preaching is a good thing for him, because it works in terms of having the players believe in what he is saying. So with all of that said, I thought that Saturday night, they were going to have a good game. They were playing a Vegas team that played the night before. They won in Carolina, then flew to Nashville late Friday night. The Predators seemed to be showing some progress in terms of the mental side of the game. And as you mentioned, they come out and they have the worst offensive performance of the season. It was as if they were unaware that they had an offensive zone. They registered season lows at all strengths in shots, shot attempts, scoring chances, high danger attempts, and expected goals, according to Natural Stat Trick.
They were also 0 for 5 on the power play.
Yes.
0 for 4 in the first 25 minutes of the game, right, when the game was still tied 0-0.
Right. So nothing went right for them, except for the play of Pekarinen, who put forth a throwback performance.
36 saves.
He single-handedly kept them in that game, and they could not reward him by scoring a goal. So it just goes back to what we were talking about before. John Hines pinpointed this team's mental fortitude as the number one thing that he needed to correct when he got here. And it's still very much a work in progress. And as I wrote yesterday on The Athletic, I'm not convinced he has enough time this season to fix it. It's going to take a lot more than 31 games and try to guide them at the... And not only is it 31 games, but he also has to do it while trying to guide this team to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I just think that I think that's going to be too difficult of a task for John Hines this season.
This team still has not won more than two games in a row since late October.
Yeah, and that's not going to get it done.
And you really thought going into Saturday night's game that just maybe they were starting to turn that corner, and then they offer little to nothing in that game. And that was the frustrating part, is we have seen this team go through this all season long, and you're at a critical point in the season right after the All-Star break. You lose in the fashion you did Monday night against Toronto, and here we are basically a week later asking a lot of the same questions. And the biggest question of them all is why. Why is this happening, especially at home, Adam? Their last eight home games, they're 2-6 with a minus 14 goal differential. Their last 50 home games, they are 23-22-6, with 12 of those losses coming by three goals or more. Those are staggering numbers for a team, for a franchise that has been so dominant at home and so reliable at home, dating back to when they first made the playoffs back in 03-04.
Something, and I wrote something to this effect a few weeks ago. I think it was after they lost to Anaheim at home. The headline of the article I wrote was, "The aura of Bridgestone Arena is gone." And it's not the fans' fault. The team has not given them much to cheer about in general, but especially at home. And I wrote in the story that between the 2014-15 and 2017-18 season, so that's four seasons, the Predators won 103 of their 164 regular season home games. And in that span, they were also 18-9 in the playoffs. And of course, we remember they were 9-2 in the playoffs at home during the run to the Stanley Cup final, clinching each series on home ice, if I'm not mistaken. So you can tell when something goes wrong at Bridgestone Arena during a game at Bridgestone Arena for the Predators, all of the energy is zapped out of the building.
But it's almost, too, like the energy is zapped out of the bench.
No, and Rocco Grimaldi said something to that effect after that game against Anaheim, that when they get down 1 or 2 nothing, it's almost as if the bench goes lifeless. I think I have the quote right here. Pardon me. It feels like when we go down 1-0 or 2-0, it seems like we are just dead on the bench, quote unquote, from Rocco Grimaldi. That was from a few weeks ago. And I believe that feeling has seeped into the stands. Easy for me to say. I feel that when this team goes down 1-0 or 2-0, the fans are resigned to the fact that they're probably not going to come back. When who scored the first goal? Chandler Stephenson.
Yes.
When Chandler Stephenson scored that goal to make it 1-0, it was like letting the air out of the balloon.
Yes, I would not put that game, though, in the same category as some of the other games where one mistake turned into multiple mistakes, and then it was a snowball that they could not stop. This was just not showing up in one of the biggest games of this regular season.
Right. Now, that was as big of a dud as you could have come up with for that team in that spot with this many games left in the season.
Coming up next, is this upcoming road trip out in Western Canada the make-or-break trip for this team? We'll get to that coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Kerry Zier, Remax Elite. And Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Ryan Porth joined in studio by Adam Vingan of The Athletic this evening. And Adam, on my way home from the game Saturday night, heard Rocco Grimaldi on the postgame show, a very honest Rocco Grimaldi on the postgame show with Darren McFarland and Hal Gill. And he was asked about the upcoming road trip. Is there anything from the week that they can carry over into this upcoming road trip where they will take on Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver? Obviously a huge road trip. And Rocco Grimaldi agrees that this is a defining trip for this team.
Honestly, this is probably the make it or break it trip of the year. This is a huge turnaround for us, hopefully, when we get 8 points on the line. And honestly, we need all of them. It's great if we get 6 or 7 out of 8, but we need all 8, honestly. They're all teams that are right in front of us by 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever points. They're all teams that we got games on hand. They're teams that are ones in our division. One, I think they won tonight, so I think they're back in front of us now. So these are enormous teams. They can swing our way. We can get 3 or 4 wins here and start moving up the tables and start pushing teams down, or it goes the other way and we're just gonna have to keep clawing and clawing and clawing. And it's, you know, eventually it's gonna be too late.
That was Rocco Grimaldi on the postgame show Saturday night after the 3-0 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. So to Rocco Grimaldi's point of all of these teams that they play in the next week being ahead of them in the standings, tomorrow night in Winnipeg, the Preds trail the Jets by 1 point. Thursday night in Calgary, the Preds trail the Flames by 5 points. Saturday in Edmonton on Hockey Night in Canada, they trail the Oilers by 7 points. And next Monday night when they close out the road trip in Vancouver, they trail the Canucks by 10 points. Now, Vancouver leads the Pacific Division. Edmonton is not a wild card either within the Pacific Division, but the Pacific Division is such a
cluster.
Yes, thank you. That at the end of it, any one of those three teams or multiple of those three teams between Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver could be teams that you're fighting with in the wild card chase.
And Vegas. And Vegas. Arizona.
Yes.
I know that they're not playing them on the trip, but they're in that cluster.
But Vegas was a part of this huge 5-game stretch Saturday night, and they get shut out at home.
Yes.
And these are all teams that you are trying to catch within the Western Conference playoff hunt. Adam, would you agree with Rocco Grimaldi's assessment of this being the make-or-break trip for this Preds team this season?
Yes, I agree completely. And I've always appreciated Rocco Grimaldi for his honesty. He doesn't blow smoke up your butt, for lack of a better term. I see you chuckling over there. Anyway, maybe some of the listeners are chuckling too. But anyway,
I just was not expecting that.
I wasn't either, but it was just the first thing that came to mind for some reason.
I'm just passionate about sports, okay?
Anyway, you're right. What's most important about this trip is that all of the teams that we mentioned, the Predators are chasing, and points not earned by the Predators and given away to these teams make that gap bigger. It's not like you're playing Anaheim or LA or San Jose.
Well, think of the four games after this road trip. The Islanders, two against the Blues, and the Hurricanes.
Right.
Those four games, even though the Blues are within your division,
you're not catching the
You're
Blues.
Not going to catch the Blues. Those four games in the standings don't mean as much in the head-to-head moment.
Correct.
As these four games do.
Correct. And, you know, it starts tomorrow, Winnipeg. The Predators, 1 point behind, as you mentioned, two games in hand on Winnipeg. I think they need, Rocco said, probably all of the points, right? He said they probably need to win all four games.
They would like to get six or seven, but in reality, they need all eight.
I think they have to have, at the absolute least, 6 out of 8 points to keep them relevant in this conversation.
Anything, and do so in regulation.
Yes. You know, 3-0-1 or 2-0-2, I don't know. But they need at least 6 points. And remember, the last time they went on a make-or-break road trip, Rocco Grimaldi used those same terms right before the Christmas break when they swept the Rangers and Islanders in back-to-back games. They lost in overtime to Ottawa, and they beat Boston. They went 3-0-1 on that road trip. They were feeling good about themselves. We obviously know that it didn't carry over past Christmas, but it put them in a good position, at least entering the Christmas break. I agree with Rocco completely. I think anything fewer than 6 points is unacceptable for this team and may be the backbreaker, especially when you consider the teams that they're playing in these games and where they are in the standings.
When you look at their road trip, or road games, I should say, since mid-December, since the start of that trip, they are really playing well on the road. For whatever reason, they cannot play well at home, but they are playing really well on the road, and maybe getting away from home, away from some of the pressure that exists right now within this city around that team, maybe going out west to Western Canada can get them going, but it has to happen on this road trip.
Yeah.
And if the opposite happens of what we're saying needs to happen, if they go 1-3 on this trip instead of 3-1 or 3-0-1, then you're looking at a team that is likely selling at the trade deadline, which is a staggering statement for this franchise considering where they have been the last couple of years and what the expectations were before the season.
Yeah, I mean, I did not expect to be saying that at this time of the year. But David Poile has been on this station and talked about the clarity that he's still looking for regarding his approach to the trade deadline, at least publicly. And if this team has a bad road trip, that kind of does the work for him. I mean, if this team comes back with a 1-3-0 record or a 1-2-1 record or something to that effect, he has to sell. This team won't be going anywhere, and it would be the best course of action for David Poile in that case to get what he can for some of his expiring contracts.
Well, when you think of the Jets, when you think of the Flames and the Oilers and the Canucks, I mean, when you look at the Oilers and the Canucks, it's not like those two teams are juggernauts. Vancouver is very good at home, but this is not a murderer's row of teams that they're about to face.
No.
It's not like the feeling that you may have had going into the Capitals game of, oh, best team in the National Hockey League. These are all very winnable games for the Preds.
Yes.
It has to happen at some point this season with this team. And like I said last segment, they take one step forward, they take one step back, or sometimes even two steps back, and you can't continue to tread water and expect to be a playoff team.
No, you can't. And a better game against Vegas the other night would have had me feeling a lot more confident. But
even a close 3-2
yeah.
loss, but the fact that they just came out and offered nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, speaking of Rocco Grimaldi, this is what Rocco Grimaldi had to say about that loss on the post-game show with Darren and Howe.
I don't think anyone really played well except Peck, honestly. I don't think any line was going. I don't think we were establishing a forecheck. I think it was just easy in and easy out. They were getting pucks, and they were just moving them up and getting them into our zone, and then we had to play defense again. So I don't know what the reason was. Maybe a couple times bad dumps to Fleury, and he's good at playing the puck. Other times just not moving our feet, not having a shot mentality. I mean, I think we had 9 shots after the second period, or 7 shots or something. So just didn't have a shot mentality. I mean, you're not shooting the puck, you shouldn't win.
That was Rocco Grimaldi on the postgame show. And unfortunately, Adam, we have heard those sentiments or similar sentiments to what Rocco Grimaldi just said way too many times after games this season from that locker room.
Yes. It's really hard to put your finger on as to why. I mean, I think fans will tell you, and we've certainly talked about it as well, you know, this is not a young group. I mean, this is the oldest roster in the league.
Mm-hmm.
This team has been in the playoffs 5 years in a row. You know, tied with the Capitals for the longest active playoff appearance streak in the NHL. They've been to a Stanley Cup final. They've won a President's Trophy. They've won consecutive Central Division titles. They've done it all short of winning a cup over the last 5 years in the playoffs especially. So this is a group that really should be impervious to this sort of thing. They shouldn't have to deal with mental fragility, for lack of a better term. And I don't typically like using that term to describe athletes because, you know, who am I to say that they're weak mentally? But hearing John Hines talk about it, as we mentioned, that was the number one thing that he pinpointed when he got here as to this needs to change before this team can get back to where it needs to go. And I just, as I said before, I don't think they have enough time for that. But, you know, it's almost if though post-game press conferences, post-game locker room availability, they're almost like therapy sessions at this point. Like, what's wrong? Why is this happening? What can we do about it? And it's I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day. You know, Bill Murray had a great Groundhog Day commercial
there
at Super Bowl last night. I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day. It's like, why is this team inconsistent? What's wrong? Why can't this team do this? Why can't this team do that? It's annoying to ask the same questions. The players are annoyed having to answer the same questions, but they're not giving us a reason not to ask them those questions.
A lot of these shows for Preds Insiders this season have felt like Groundhog Day.
Yes.
So coming up next, you mentioned the trade deadline earlier this segment, and for the trade deadline, I want to put you in the shoes of GM David Poile.
Ooh.
Okay?
Yes.
We're going to do that coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth joined in studio by Adam Vingan of The Athletic this evening. Preds lose 3-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights Saturday night at home. They embark on a 4-game road trip tomorrow night at the Winnipeg Jets. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. A very important road trip, as you heard Adam and I detail last segment. And it's a very important road trip to determine what they're going to do, or help determine what this team is going to do at the trade deadline on February 24th.
That is 3 weeks from today.
3 weeks from today. Let's kind of play a hypothetical game here, Adam.
Armchair GM, perhaps?
Sure. Let's say...
Even though my chair doesn't have arms? Barstool GM?
It's more like a ledge.
Yes.
GM. But...
Kitchen Island GM?
Sure. All of the above.
Okay.
So let's hypothetically say the trade deadline was February 4th and not 24th.
Okay.
That would mean the trade deadline would be tomorrow.
Okay.
If you were in the shoes of GM David Poile, what moves are you looking to make?
The first thing that I'm doing is trading Mikhail Granlund. Now, Mikhail Granlund, and I wrote about this after the game against Washington, he to me appears the most rejuvenated by the coaching change. He seems like a different player under John Hines. I just think stylistically he was not a fit under Peter Laviolette. I think you're seeing more of the player that the Predators thought they were getting last year at the deadline in the past 3 to 4 weeks from Mikhail Granlund. But he's about to turn, I believe, 28 later this month. He's on an expiring contract. He makes $5.75 million. This team has enough money tied up in and term tied up in forwards around his age in the late 20s to early 30s. With the cap situation as it is for the Predators, the likelihood of Mikael Granlin re-signing with this team is slim. I spoke to his agent, Todd Diamond, recently. It does not appear that there have been any significant contract discussions between the Predators and Mikael Granlund. I get the sense that perhaps Granlund's side is seeing how he responds to the coaching change, which has been positive. But I just think that if you know that it's not going to work mathematically to re-sign him, they need to get something for him. Better than walking away for nothing after trading Kevin Fiala for him last year. So that's the first thing I am definitely doing, is trading Mikael Granlund.
Okay. What would it take if you're the Nashville Predators to not trade Granlund? Is there any scenario on the plate for you to not trade Granlund?
Well, if we put the trade deadline back at the 24th instead of the 4th,
sure.
If this team goes on a heater, on a big run, and Granlund continues to play well, I think you can treat him as an own rental. Similarly to what
Columbus did with Artemi Panarin.
Exactly. Where you know you're not going to re-sign him, but he's playing well and he's helping you compete for a playoff spot. That's worth it. If it means him not coming back and you're not going to get anything from him.
Mm-hmm.
Or for him, rather.
Sure.
So that's the only circumstance. Unless this team goes on a run, which, as we've mentioned, we have not seen from them since late October, because they haven't won more than two consecutive games since late October. If that were to happen and Granlund were to continue to play the way he's playing, I would consider keeping him. Under any other circumstance, I'm trading him by the deadline.
What about Craig Smith, another pending unrestricted free agent?
That's a tougher one. I think I would. You have to wonder in that scenario if the sentimental value outweighs the trade value, just because of how long Craig Smith has been here. I mean, it's hard to believe that Craig Smith has played more than 600 games for the Predators.
It really is.
I mean, he's one of the games played leaders in franchise history. I think the only players in front of him are, in some order, David Legwan, Shea Weber, Pecorine, and Martin Erat. I think that's it. And I'm curious as to what they do there. I'd be more hesitant to trade Craig Smith than Mikael Granlund.
Because you have a better chance of bringing him back beyond this season? Is that the reason?
That's part of it, for sure. Because I believe that Craig's next contract, cap hit-wise, will not be as much as it is now. I believe it's 4.25 right now or something thereabouts. He's not going to get a raise, I don't think. I think he's going to get a small deduction, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
So I do, and again, it kind of goes back to sentimental value. I feel like Craig Smith is we received an offer for you that we can't refuse kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that he won't be traded, but I think it will take more to get him than it would Mikael Granlund, just based on his attachment to the organization.
Would you listen on Rocco Grimaldi?
If the right offer came, because Rocco Grimaldi has been one of the few players on this team that has either met or exceeded expectations. He makes $1 million. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. You know, he's not a flashy guy, but he works his butt off, as well as not blowing smoke up it. He works his butt off. You can always count on him for consistent effort. I think he could be attractive to a team that's tight against the cap but is competing for a Stanley Cup. So I think if the right offer came for Rocco, I would take it. But he's not a guy that I'm necessarily shopping. But if someone said, hey, we're a Stanley Cup contending team that has very little cap space, Rocco Grimaldi would be great in our bottom six. Here's a third round pick or a fourth round pick. Maybe, sure. Mm-hmm. But he's not on the top of my list.
Would you be open to trading any of the veteran defensemen, Dan Hamhuis, Yannick Weber, Matt Irwin?
I'm just wondering,
can you get much for them?
I don't think you're getting anything for Yannick Weber or Matt Irwin. I think maybe you could get something for Dan Hamhuis by name recognition alone. Like, he's not having a great season, but he's a veteran in this league. He's done it for a long time. Perhaps the idea of having Dan Hamhuis on your team in a third pairing role is attractive to a team. I think by name recognition alone, perhaps you can give something for Dan Hamhuis, but I can't see any team being interested in Yannick Weber.
So we just went through the pending free agents for this team, pending unrestricted free agents.
Yes.
Could you foresee other names popping up in trade rumors if this team does not get it going in the next few weeks?
There are two.
Who?
That have contract, who have term left on their contract.
Who?
Nick Bonino and Callie Yarncroke.
Those were the two that I was going to ask you about.
For Nick Bonino, he is the type of player that teams lust after at the trade deadline. He's a veteran player. He's won two Stanley Cups. He's responsible defensively. He's been scoring goals. His value has never been higher. But I think you only trade him if your season goes in the tank in the next 3 weeks. Like, you know that by the deadline, we're not making the playoffs. Like, if there's any hope of you making the playoffs by the deadline, I think you hold on to Nick Bonino.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets so bad that your chances of making the playoffs over the course of the next 3 weeks just plummet precipitously, then I think you trade him, because there is going to be a team that's going to give you, I think, good value for Nick Bonino. Callie Yarncroke as well. I mean, it's funny because he was acquired in a selling move when the Predators traded David Legwand to the Detroit Red Wings. And Callie's been a good hand. He's got a great contract. And he's got term left on that contract. So
2 more years beyond this one.
Yeah, so I think that he could be had similarly to Rocco Grimaldi if the right deal came along. Nick Bonino is the most intriguing one for me. I think, as I mentioned, I feel like the only way that the Predators should seriously consider trading him is if the season goes south fast. Otherwise, I think they should hold on to him for now.
At what point? So we've mostly been talking about selling.
Yes.
Within this discussion.
Yes.
At what point do you do both selling and buying, or just strictly become a buyer? At how far out or where in the playoff race do you have to be to say, okay, I'm not going to sell, I'm going to go for it in terms of trying to make the playoffs?
I think this team should only buy, and like only buy, not sell, if they're in a playoff spot and right before the deadline. And they haven't been in the playoff spot since November 13th. If they are in a playoff spot on the day or two before the deadline, they can buy. And what I think they need to buy is a defenseman. The good news is that Ryan Ellis seems to be progressing towards a return. He's not going to play on this upcoming road trip, but he is going with the team. And John Hines said today that the hope is that he'll practice or start practicing with the team at some point during this trip, which is an important step in the protocol to return. This team has greatly missed Ryan Ellis. And I think it has also shown that the bottom half of their defensive depth needs some work.
Mm-hmm.
Between Dan Hamhuis and Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin and Jared Tenorti, you know, even Dante Favreau.
I was going to bring up his name because before the season, there were some people that were sold that he could play a top four role.
He's not ready yet.
I was hesitant to go there because it was such a small sample size last year, and he's so young, so green to the National Hockey League, that I have felt most of the season that he should be on the third pair and not playing top 4 minutes.
I think they should be, if everybody's healthy, you have Josi and Ellis, you have Ekholm and acquired defenseman X and Hamhuis and Favreau on your third pair. Now, I think they need a defenseman in the mold of someone, if they were to buy, like a Brendan Dillon from the San Jose Sharks.
What about Sammy Vatanen from the Devils?
I feel like Vatanen, he is a good puck-moving defenseman, but just based on some of his fancy stats, he doesn't really move the needle on either end, 5-on-5. He's not great offensively or great offense. I mean, he's got numbers this year, but in terms of his underlying numbers offensively, they're not great.
Okay.
And defense is not a strong suit. I think this is a team, Brendan Dillon playing for the San Jose Sharks, he's solid defensively, and he can kill penalties. Like, I feel like that's the kind of defenseman they need. They've got Ekholm, who can play a more offensive-minded game if you have him on a pair with a more defensive-minded defenseman. And then Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi together. So I think a veteran defenseman, preferably one that's right-handed. I don't remember if Dillon's
lefty.
Left-handed. But, you know, Ekholm can play on his offside. And I bet Brendan Dillon can as well. But a defenseman in that mold who's stronger defensively and can contribute to the penalty kill was something that I would be looking for in a defenseman more than an offensive-minded defenseman.
Coming up next, Victor Arvidsson. Why has number 33 not been the same this season? We'll get to that next, plus we'll take a look at tomorrow night's Preds-Jets matchup. On Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, on this Monday evening. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Fingan of The Athletic. Coming up at the top of the hour, Slapshot Radio, Paul McCann and company. They will be in the house continuing the Preds coverage. Friday, the Smash Brothers, 6 to 7 p.m. with Adam Fingan and Robbie Stanley. The show will debut Friday evening at 6 o'clock. Looking forward to that as well. And speaking of Robbie Stanley, one conversation that I had with Robbie Stanley on this show on Preds Insiders recently, Adam, was Victor Arvidsson. Why hasn't Victor Arvidsson looked or produced the same as he has been in the last couple years? And I wanted to watch Arvidsson just singularly a little bit Saturday night against Vegas. And there was a pretty clear observation that I made. And it's one that I've had at other points in this season, but specifically Saturday night. There's not much burst within Victor Arvidsson, or at least not the same level of burst within his game on the ice as he's had in recent years. And Victor Arvidsson has been a player that has thrived on speed. He's thrived on really being tenacious, getting after the puck on a forecheck. And I think that is worrisome with Victor Arvidsson. Now, he did suffer the injury back in November where Robert Bortuzzo cross-checked him in the back. Victor Arvidsson missed 12 games due to that injury. I believe it wasn't his back. It was lower body. And pre-injury, Victor Arvidsson had 15 points in 22 games. Post-injury, he has 7 points in 17 games. I wouldn't say that is a massive difference, but the production has fallen off after the injury compared to before the injury. This season, Victor Arvidsson, he is on pace for 21 goals, 39 points, and only 161 shots on goal, which is a pretty big drop off from recent years, Adam. So I went back today and watched every single goal that Victor Arvidsson has scored this season. And you know what my biggest takeaway was?
What's that, Ryan?
None of them have come on a breakaway. None of them have come on an odd man rush where he is generating the offense and he's flying down ice. How many times have we seen him score goals like that over the last 2, 3, 4 years?
And I've got some numbers that might surprise you.
Plenty.
Based on what you're talking about.
So of Arvidsson's 12 goals, 5 of them were on a rebound. 3 of them have come off a deflection. One of them, a deflection off his shin in Chicago as Yossi was backhanding a puck into the net.
Yes.
2 were set plays on the power play where he scored point blank. 1 was quirky against Arizona where it bounced off Antti Raanta's shoulder and trickled into the net.
Right.
And then there was 1 early in the season where he was tenacious on the forecheck. He generated a steal and scored a goal. Those have been his 12 goals. He has scored so many in recent years where he's been flying down ice, where he has used his speed to his advantage to blow past defenders or just simply have a breakaway and score on those.
So I want.
And he hasn't had many of those either, even chances, let alone goals this season.
I didn't want to interrupt
Sorry.
You there. So to your point, I want to share some numbers with you that back up what you're saying. So according to Natural Stat Trick, last season, Victor Arvidsson, per 60 minutes at 5-on-5, averaged 0.96 rush attempts per 60 minutes, 0.96. This season, 0.37.
Wow.
And I'm not really sure as to why, but his rush attempts are down significantly.
I didn't even think about looking at those stats before pulling all those up,
and so,
all the goals up.
I mean, Victor Arvidsson is a player who we know how tenacious he is, but he is a player who I feel does his best work off the rush, whether it's on a breakaway, odd man rush, or a normal rush up ice. We have not seen that from him, you're right, and those numbers back it up. And I think that the injury certainly cost him. You know, injury cost him time. He got lost. He lost a month of the season. But yeah, he, among others, have not played to their capability this year, and that's what poses an interesting situation for the Predators. Not necessarily at the trade deadline, but during the summer, they have a lot of players who are not playing up to their capabilities. And if they're looking to make a change, it's going to be hard to move some of those contracts just because they'd be selling at – they'd be selling – they wouldn't be – they would not be making those trades in a position of strength.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get the value for Victor Arvidsson if you were to consider trading him this summer.
Many players are performing way below what you're either paying them for or what they have been performing at in recent years.
Right, and I wonder if Victor Arvidsson is one of those players that will fall into the, well, he had a bad year, we'll give it another try category. But he's got a great contract, and he has shown in the past couple of years to be a high-end goal scorer. So if push came to shove and you would consider trading him this summer, which again, we're just talking hypothetically here, you're not going to get value back. You're not going to get value back for any of the players that are that are disappointing this year. Fair value. You are going to get, you're going to have to sell for pennies on the dollar, basically. And it's not worth it to make change for the sake of change. But Victor Arvidsson, to your point, and to the, as the numbers show, has not been anywhere near as dynamic on the rush this season as he has been in years past.
What were the rush attempts again this season?
It was 0.96 per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. This year, it's 0.37 per 60 minutes at 5-on-5.
Do you know where those numbers lie in terms of the rest of the team?
I would have to look. I don't have the page up right now. But okay. Arvidsson was near the top of the team last year, and now he's in the bottom half this year.
There were just so many goals in which he scored last year or years prior where he was just shot out of a cannon. Or he's generating chances by being shot out of a cannon. And I'm sitting there Saturday night watching him saying to myself, there's no cannon for him to be shot out of. Like, there's not much there with Victor Arvidsson's game. And then going back and watching the goals, the fact that he hasn't had a breakaway goal or an odd man rush goal where he's bringing the puck through the neutral zone or he's getting a pass at the blue line and just taking off. I mean, there have been so many goals like that. It really is staggering with Victor Arvidsson. And we talk a lot about Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg and even Matt Duchene needing to either live up to what they're being paid, Kyle Turris, live up to what they're getting paid or what they've done in the past in their NHL career. There hasn't been a whole lot of talk about Victor Arvidsson. Maybe it is because, A, he's so beloved by a lot of Preds fans, and he's not making the $6 to $8 million per season. He's at 4.25 through 2024.
Yes.
But Victor Arvidsson is a key component of that offense. There have been many stretches of past seasons where he has been the straw that stirs the drink on offense, and whatever line he's on, it's the strongest line at that point in the season. And I really hope for the Preds' sake that this is just an off year for Victor Arvidsson and a lot of the hits that he's taken over the years and a lot of the beating that he's taken over the years isn't adding up.
You hope so. Because Philip Forsberg as well, he's been scoring goals lately. He had the lacrosse goal against Edmonton a few weeks ago, but he hasn't been the same dynamic player either. I was having this conversation earlier today with Darren and Chase. There are five players off the top of my head who this season are either exceeding or meeting expectations. Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith. And maybe Matthias Ekholm, just because he went from having PK Subban as a partner to Dante Fabro. So either way, that's a quarter of the team that has shown up and three quarters that hasn't. So and that's why they are where they are.
Mm-hmm.
The players that are making the big money are not playing as if they are making the big money.
Well, tomorrow night, the Preds begin their road trip in Winnipeg, a huge road trip. And you got to have this one tomorrow night. The Winnipeg Jets are right in front of you within your own division. You went there a few weeks ago. You shut out the Jets 1-0. UC Saros had the shutout on that Sunday afternoon in Winnipeg. In early January, I would assume UC Saros would be in net again tomorrow night after Pekka has played the last couple games. One key thing to watch in tomorrow night's game between the Preds and Jets, it has felt like since the start of the 2018 playoffs, in these games between these two teams, it's been a race to score the first goal. And whoever scores the first goal dictates the pace of the game and ends up winning the game. And to back that up, the team that scores first in this matchup is 11-2 in their last 13 meetings, including the playoffs. Tomorrow night, huge game. It is a huge opportunity to start fast and make that 12-2 if you can score first.
Yeah, that's very important. And the Jets over the past several weeks have been coming back down to earth. They were a team that was carried by their goaltending through most of the first half of the season. Connor Hellebuyck was putting together a Vezina Trophy-worthy season, but his numbers have started to dip, and the team's play has started to dip concurrently. It's not a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets were in the news today. Frank Saravalli of TSN reported that it appears that the Jets and Dustin Byfuglien are nearing a mutual termination of his contract. Of course, he hasn't played this season. He's been in a dispute with the Jets regarding his salary. He's been sitting out because of injury throughout the whole season, which would make him a free agent, which is also a very intriguing thing.
Intriguing timing
yes.
with that, too, just 3 weeks from the
right.
deadline.
But this is a team that has not been great on defense, the Jets, this year. Connor Hellebuyck has started to struggle. This is a good opportunity for the Predators to take advantage of that, and it just goes to what we were talking about earlier. This is a gigantic trip, and a win sets them up nicely for the rest of the trip, but a loss tomorrow, it's all uphill from there. If they lose tomorrow, they can't afford to make any mistakes the rest of the way. They mm-hmm. need to give themselves some wiggle room as much as one can in their position by winning tomorrow.
Adam Fingan of The Athletic, great stuff as always. Appreciate you coming by the studio.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. For Adam Fingan, I'm Ryan Porth. Thank you for listening to tonight's edition of Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and Company right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.